Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
When your skin feels nourished and glows, you radiate confidence. Osea makes giving your skin a glow up easy with their clean, clinically proven Mega Moisture Duo. This seaweed-powered duo features two of Osea's best sellers, Undaria Algae Body Oil and Undaria Collagen Body Lotion. Glow from the inside out. Get 10% off your first order with code GLOW at OseaMalibu.com. That's OseaMalibu.com, code GLOW.
Hello, hello. This is just a note to say that this podcast episode contains spoilers and a brief reference to suicide.
So, girly pops, if you've been around Gay Actually or Gay Actually on UKFR for a while, you know two things about me. Okay, you know that I had an obsession with Tom Cruise when I was a youngster. And you know that I had an obsession with Wentworth, the TV show.
Both are as creepy as they sound. They sound. Can I speak?
Anyway, and I had the obsession with Wentworth because of Bridget Westfall, the psychologist. Amber sent me this reel this morning. Oh my god, I literally can't believe it. She sent me this reel this morning of Bridget Westfall, and the top comment was,
yes, so I sent it to you this morning and was like, read the top comment, because it literally said, she looks like the female version of Tom Cruise. Oh, and I was like, Joyce, the stars have aligned for you.
Oh my god. And actually, it's not wrong. She has the same mouth. Even like that mole that Tom Cruise has, she has something there.
So now I know your type.
No, literally insane. Like, I screamed. Screamed.
Cries in Scientology.
Oh my. Don't send me any letters. I'm not joining. I don't have any money. Yeah, just honestly, it's blown away, truly. Mm. Anyway, Libby Tanner, if you're listening to this,
hey girl,
hit me up. Love ya. Or Tom Cruise, for that matter. I'm willing to try.
No! Cue the intro.
But I am the way they said I am.
I'm a homosexual.
So we need to change. Welcome to Gay Actually. Pish 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 is a lesbian film.
I think I might replace our intro with just that.
And we're live.
Did I make you nervous, Corky?
I'm a homosexual!
Lesbian.
I'm a homosexual.
I have loved you the way they said!
You fancy gears?
I'm having a proper full-on gay crisis.
Hello and welcome to Gay Actually. Thanks for being here. It's going to be a fun old gay time.
Pitch Perfect is a lesbian musical film.
Of course.
I want to carry off badass lesbian chic like Kate Blanchett can.
Welcome. Welcome to Gay Actually, a series as part of the UK Film Review podcast. We are your hosts, Amber and Joyce. We are here to talk about all things LGBTQ+ film. What a roller coaster it's been so far. We've already talked about Rachel Sennett. We lost our minds over the fact that she's not queer.
Or Jewish.
If you missed that episode, it's our January episode. Where have you been? Feel free to catch up. Also, we have our own channel, Gay Actually. We have a couple of episodes over there for your listening ears. We review Dan Levy's film Good Grief, and we have also reviewed the queer rom-com of last summer, Red, White, and Royal Blue. So if you're into If you're into weird royal gay princes or a discussion of grief with the guy from Schitt's Creek, these are the episodes for you. I'm going to stop rambling now. Join us.
Hi.
Hey, y'all.
What's up? When you find out what we're going to talk about in this episode, which you will probably guess from the title, there's a reason why we've lost our minds this week.
Oh, we went to... Yes. What are we talking about, Joyce?
We were talking about the most depressing film I've ever seen in my entire life. All of Us Strangers.
All of Us Strangers. We went to see it on Monday. That was 3 days before we're recording this. And it's very rare that we'll go and see a film together. Mm-hmm. So we got to experience it together. It was very, very cathartic, very fun. And Joyce cried the whole time.
And you laughed at me.
I just caught you off guard because it was a really quiet bit. And all of a sudden, Joyce just went... Because she was absolutely... And I turned around. I hadn't realised she was bawling her eyes out. So I just went... Joyce literally said, she was like, don't laugh at me.
No,
in the cinema, really quietly. It was fine, we didn't disturb anyone, but we were creasing.
The reason I said don't laugh is because she made, like, I wanted to laugh at you laughing because the noise you made was so funny, but I was already crying, so what was coming out of me was just absolute, like, terror. It was like, and I was like, oh my god, now I'm being too loud. I was crying silently in peace.
Yeah.
Anyway, All of Us Strangers.
Oh, what a roller coaster. A new film came out at the end of January, so really new, really fresh. Andrew Scott, Paul Mescal, Claire Foy. Really, really good.
Hot, hot, hot.
Emotions were felt. Things were seen. Yeah, where to even begin? Where to even begin with this gorgeous film? It's been received really well by critics.
All of Us Strangers was directed by someone called Andrew...
Hay. Andrew Hay.
I haven't seen any of his other films, but he's the one that did Lean on Pete, which I always wanted to watch, but I never got around to.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Nice.
It is really well received, like you were saying.
Yeah. Okay. I just feel like if you haven't seen it, before you listen to this review, go and watch it, because we're probably about to spoil it, but also... Like, there's just no way of comprehending this film if you haven't seen it. Like, do you know what I mean? I just feel like it's such an experience, and especially in the cinema.
Yeah, I don't think I even comprehend it now.
No. No, I barely feel like I can comprehend it as well. I feel like we should probably just dive straight in.
Yeah.
TBH.
Okay. What did you rate it? Did you give it a rating?
On Letterboxd,
mm-hmm.
I just updated my Letterboxd from like a month's worth of films. I think I gave it a 5, but I can't remember off the top of my head.
Wow, a 5.
It was either a 4 or a 5.
Okay.
What about you?
I didn't give it a rating because I don't know.
Okay. Okay.
I'm really struggling. And I can't actively think about this film too much because I will literally fall into a hole of darkness.
That's... great.
Yeah.
No, you
can cut this out if this is a spoiler too soon in the episode, but I like films where everyone dies at the end is like,
it's tough,
the bleakest shit to me ever. Like, only films where everyone dies at the end are films where I feel like I'm gonna go, and
it's quite Shakespearean, isn't it?
Oh,
it's quite depressing. You kind of feel a bit like you've got whiplash at the end.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess we should dive straight into it.
Let's do that.
All of Us Strangers is beautiful. We have Andrew Scott as...
sexy.
You may know Andrew Scott as being the hot priest. I know most of you listening will. However, those of you... I know there are some nerds listening to this. Moriarty.
I literally have the Sherlock box set under my bed currently.
He's been a queer icon for a long time.
Yeah.
There's nothing new
that
I am witnessing right now, but I think it is new for certain audiences that are coming to see Andrew Scott play a queer role for the first time. He's done lots of queer roles. Moriarty was kind of the first queer-coded...
So fruity.
Fruity fruit fruit. moment. There's been a lot of, he's had a lot of queer fans for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
It's very exciting to see him in a role like this. He is playing a gay man. He's living in a apartment block that is new. It's a new build, so it's not been filled yet, and so it's very isolating. It's very lonely, and he meets one of the only other people living in the building, Paul Mescal's character, and they kind of develop a romance.
So Andrew Scott's character is called Adam.
Yeah,
and Paul Mescal is Harry.
So Adam meets Harry. There's a romance that's formed, and that's kind of budding alongside Adam still dealing with his childhood grief of losing both of his parents very young. And the film is very candid about how he's trying to wrestle his loneliness, his queerness, and his grief, all intertwined with each other. And that's basically the plot. At its bones, it's very simple, but I think it makes a really, really thoughtful film.
Mm-hmm.
What are your initial thoughts? Should we start at the beginning?
Yeah.
Tell me what you thought, because we haven't actually spoken that much about it yet. We kind of were like, well, that's depressing. See you on Thursday. That was kind of it.
Oh my God. What I liked about the film is that it really went there. Like, it didn't hold back on covering subjects that are difficult to talk about. And it was very honest about it. Yeah. And I really appreciated that part. Like, it didn't feel like it was trying to make light of it or kind of spin the romance to become, like, the central story. It was very real.
Yeah.
And then I kind of liked the way it played with time and perception of reality. I think that's always quite fun for me. It was very simple, but it was effective here in this example. I think it was good. I'm struggling because I cannot grieve. And I said this in an episode about good grief. Yeah. But like seeing people grieve or like the talk of grief really makes me cry like a child. So I was preoccupied with that.
You got through a lot of packs of tissues, that's for sure.
I did.
I completely agree with you. I think, obviously, we've talked about quite candidly at the end of last year, queer narratives frozen in time. And I feel like this film is a really clear example of that.
Mm-hmm.
This guy, Adam, he feels so suspended in time. He's like a princess in his tower. Like, he's in this tower block. The opening shot is gorgeous. The entire skyline of London as the sun's coming up. And then he slowly comes into view. He's looking over everything. Because London, the city, is bustling. It's loud. But we don't... He lives in London. He's looking at London.
Yeah.
And we don't see any of the hustle and bustle. Everything is very... There are, like, hectic moments where there's lots of people. But it's all very isolated. You just get the sense that he is just far removed from other people's reality. He exists in his own space, and he even exists in his own time. Especially because as the film goes through the motions, he's having conversations with his parents who have been dead for a long time. But it's like they're happening in real time because he wants to be having these conversations with them. He wants to kind of speak to his parents as an adult to gain some type of comfort, when really the film just has to chart his journey towards closure. And like, it's just such a beautiful thing. It's heartbreaking as hell, but it's such a nice thing to witness him coming to that acceptance stage of grief and actually understanding that he needs to move on for himself, and it's okay. And it's so sad.
Yeah.
No wonder you cried so much.
Yeah.
I don't really cry during films. I feel like sad and like I well up. But with things like that, like I'm a bit sick. Just the tears just don't fall.
The tears fall for me.
Repression.
And depression.
Summer depression.
That was really nicely said. Yeah. Oh,
thanks, girl.
Should we start how they meet? Actually, I think this is super cute.
Oh, Adam and Harry.
Adam and Harry.
Go for it.
So it starts with Adam. He's clearly a writer. He's trying to write. He doesn't have any inspiration.
I love the records he puts on as well. Like, just to kind of... that. Just to interject, I feel like he's often playing 80s music.
Mm-hmm.
And it's... I guess he's trying to return to that time. Because I'm never really sure if it's part of his writing process or part of his grieving process or if it's both. Because he's writing a play about or a film about his parents. And the records he plays whilst he's writing are all from the 80s. Frankie Goes to Hollywood. Other famous 80s songs.
Unspecified.
But, like, it's all really famous songs that it's, like, he's trying to get back into that time.
Yeah.
For multiple reasons, as we find out.
Well...
but yeah,
you could say that he's frozen in time or something like that.
Hey, girl, hey.
Yeah, because when we see him interact with his parents, there's often records playing kind of in his memory of what it was like living with his parents in his childhood home. So it makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a writer, and then the fire alarm goes off in the building. He goes downstairs, and there's like five people outside or something like that.
And there's like no one outside from his building. It's like he lives in that building alone.
Yeah, it's very lonely and it feels very like empty. You know when you're walking alone at night and there's like massive buildings around and it just feels like there's no one there.
City of ghosts.
Yeah, but there are people, but you just can't see them.
Yeah.
It's terrifying.
But I feel like as well he is just surrounded literally by ghosts.
Well, yeah, he is.
Because we don't, spoiler alert, we don't interact with anyone other than him and the, quote, ghosts of his past.
Yeah.
We don't meet anyone external to that. So we're in his head the whole time.
Yeah.
It's mad, right?
So when he's standing outside, he looks up, and I think this film, and you were saying it with the skyline and the window and the...
gorgeous.
It is gorgeous. And I've always liked that idea, and I think a lot of people do, of kind of having a look at a building and seeing all the little lives happening in all the little windows, right?
Mm.
Like, it's such a
common... Rear Window.
Like Rear Window, but also just in photography, there's so many people are inspired by it, right? It's great.
Yeah.
And we kind of get that here for a second, because we see one window that's still lit up and someone's inside, kind of leaning against the window. It just looks so great. Like, you just want to know what's inside. Right? Yeah. I get that curiosity. So yeah, Adam goes back up to his apartment and then that person from that floor comes and pays him a visit.
Ooh la la!
With a bottle of, what was it?
Mm-mm.
Tequila?
Whiskey? Tequila? Yeah. Something spicy.
Oh, gin. It was gin.
Oh, something spicy.
With a bottle of gin. He's like, do you want a drink? And Adam says no. Rip.
That's very sad. I also love that in this film, two gorgeous Irish actors, only one of them is Irish. Paul Mescal decides to adopt a Mancunian accent for this film, which I actually thought was quite good. I think he did quite well.
That means nothing to my non-British ears.
Well, he's from Manchester.
Oh,
sorry.
Mancunian? Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
Mancunian, like... Liverpudlian.
Pudlian.
Liverpudlian, if you're from Liverpool.
Scouse.
Yeah, it can be Scouse.
Okay.
Most people say Scouse.
Yeah.
Brummy, if you're from Birmingham.
I have heard that, Brummy.
Yeah, well, there you go.
Manconian?
Mancunian.
Mancunian.
Everyone listening from the north right now is going to be like, screw you, but to me.
Wow.
But yeah, from Manchester.
Well, what's like a Yorkshire accent?
Pass. I'm from the south.
The south.
I'm from the south with an F.
Okay.
Oh, that was another part of the film as well, when he was like, what am I going to do in Dorking? And I was like, you know, I looked at you at that moment.
Yeah, what is that?
That is a town near where I grew up.
Oh.
That's literally...
Oh, because it's like outside of London.
It's suburbs, yeah.
Okay, funny. That was a good conversation.
And I concur, because there's nothing to do in Dorking. It is boring. Mm-hmm. No shade. Tom Felton's there sometimes.
To do what?
His mum lives there.
Oh. Thank you for the context.
His mum owns a shop in Dorking.
Okay.
But there's not much to do.
Okay.
But yes, near where I grew up.
Oh, well, thank you for that.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I've learned.
That was a nice little point of connection for me. Anyway.
Yeah. Come on, please. What happens after that? He goes to visit his parents.
He goes to visit his parents a lot. I couldn't figure out where his parents lived. Somewhere suburbia, right?
It was giving Kent.
It was giving...
Because I swear he was on like a southeastern train. Maybe it's like...
Yeah. He was going to East Grinstead, so that's in Sussex.
Okay.
So maybe, I mean...
That's south.
He's a southern boy.
Yeah.
Well, so he has an Irish accent in the film, and I was wondering how they were going to explain that. And then they explained that when his parents died when he was a child, he moved to be with his granny in Dublin. Now, that makes sense. I was like, thank you for addressing that. Like, because he just didn't do an accent. Yeah. I was like, fair. But Paul Mescal did a very good Mancunian accent.
Mancunian. Okay. I'm really confused about this film because I can't, like, keep up with the timeline because so much happened that, like, switched everything around.
But I don't think there is a timeline,
though. No, let's just talk about the different parts of, like, the film.
Let's do it.
Okay, should we talk about the parents first or the relationship first?
Let's talk about the parents first. Okay. Claire Foy, wonderful actress. Jamie Bell as well, right? Yeah, she's really good.
She was so good. Like, it really blew my mind. Like, her reactions, her facial expressions were so on point.
Even her accent as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because I think originally she's from near Birmingham. Obviously, she's an actress, so she can do accents. But I've only seen Claire Foy in The Crown playing the Queen.
Yeah.
One. That's what she says. She's like, Philip. So for her to actually kind of have that, like... that southern English accent, I thought she did really well. I felt like she was a mum. And obviously his parents died young, to the point where he is actually... I thought it was really interesting he was having a conversation with his parents, but he's older than his parents were when they died.
Yeah.
And that kind of thing of... I've heard it before where kind of people who have lost their parent, whose parents have died young, mm-hmm. have kind of reached that age and progressed older than mm-hmm. when their parents died and kind of had a little moment, not a crisis moment, but a moment of being like, I've outlived my parents. Like, I'm older than my parents were.
Yeah.
And they were my parent.
Yeah.
And he's kind of, I can kind of see him having to reconcile that of, I'm older than my parents and I have a lived experience that they will never know or understand. Because they're in the 80s. They're trapped in the 80s. He comes out to them as gay and they have a very... They accept it. Surprisingly, they have a very nice response to it because they're dead and in his imagination. But it's kind of... He imagines having a conversation with them with their 80s mindset. So... HIV and AIDS is rampant. The government and the people treat gay people terribly.
Mm.
She kind of says as well, you know, I don't want you to have a difficult life, which, relatable. Like, I've had that conversation.
Mm, same, actually.
Yeah. And it captures that feeling of queerness really well.
Mm.
Like, multi-generationally as well. Because his parents are young, so they're accepting, but they're only accepting in their time frame. Mm-hmm. It's so interesting, all of that. I can't remember what my original point was, but that is an observation I made.
Claire Foy,
my God, yes. She's so good. And yeah. Jamie Bell as well. I think he was in Billy Elliot. I don't know what else I've seen him in.
He looks very familiar.
But I thought the dynamic of kind of talking to his parents like they're his friends, you can tell that they had a good relationship when he was a kid. And he's kind of, you know, it's nice.
Yeah, but you can also tell that the way he felt about his parents when he was a kid is kind of still there when you read between the lines.
Yeah.
And they do address it at some point. I think he has a conversation with his dad at some point that's very... It's quite sad. It's very intense about him being bullied when he was a kid and how his dad never really said or did anything about it.
Yeah.
Right? So, the cracks start to show at some point after the initial relief of seeing each other again. And, the small talk and finding out about each other's lives. But then the cracks start to show and it gives a lot of context for... It actually just paints a really complex relationship with his parents that is very normal.
Yeah.
But because his parents died when he was so young, it's almost like that's not the stuff you would think about. Like, you only think about, the happy memories and the sadness is purely in the fact that they died. But then there's all this other stuff that actually still weighs on him, in a way. And he never had any closure for it because he never was able to have those conversations with his parents when they were alive. So he has to deal with that separately. Like, I'm sure many people have had conversations with their parents after they've, moved out or after they're grown up about things that happened when they were children, right? And that's almost necessary for a lot of people because it's cathartic and you actually get to work through of some of the stuff that you weren't able to talk about before. But he never got that.
Yeah.
Because his parents died. So having these conversations is actually, it's really interesting because it just sheds such a light on, these things that we don't necessarily think about.
Yeah. Do you think it kind of, it kind of attests it, him trying to process those feelings as well? Like, he's trying to work through them by himself because he's got no one else to talk to about it.
Yeah.
And that's his way of accepting it and moving on, maybe, in a way. It's really sad.
Yeah. It's like he can't let his parents go until he's had these conversations and has had that closure about it.
And it even gets to the point where even, the ghosts of his parents, they're not ghosts, but, the figment of his imagination is you need to move on now.
Yeah.
It's time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just hits you right there. But then I kind of wonder, there's little fragments of him in public, and he even goes to public places with his parents, and it makes me wonder, what can other people see? Do they see him kind of acting the way we see him, or is that just in his head?
So what I didn't know, and I still don't know, is if he actually goes to these places, if he actually goes to the house.
That's what I was trying to figure out as well, is that I don't know if, I think you're right, I don't know if it's as literal as it looks.
I think the first time is real.
Yeah.
And he went for the first time. And then there was some dissociation in the field and suddenly his dad was there. I think it opened up something in him when he went to that house with the photo.
Yeah.
I think it opened Pandora's box.
Because he went to trigger something because he was struggling to write. Yeah. So then he went to kind of trigger it and then...
Yeah, and I think the dissociation happened in that field because he closes his eyes and suddenly it's dark outside, right?
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe he did go home in the meantime, and maybe that's what he's thinking about when he gets home. When I was standing in that field, what if suddenly my dad appeared?
Yeah, I think you're right, and I think the point is that we don't know. Yeah. The point is that we just see him suspended in time.
Yeah.
Just trying to figure things out. I don't know if it's meant to be as literal as it is.
Yeah.
Which I think is really interesting to kind of portray the inner workings of grief that way. Because obviously we've just reviewed Good Grief, the Dan Levy film. And that was very concrete. That was a very physical, more tangible representation of grief. He's talking to his friends. He's, digging through.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack
for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Their relationship, they're going to Paris, they're moving, they're talking, they're processing together. And this is so internal. Like, we don't get to hear how he feels. Whereas Dan Levy would be like, in the film, Good Grief, would be talking about how he feels.
Mm-hmm.
We only get to see how he feels and put our own understanding onto that,
mm-hmm.
which I think is quite fun.
Yeah.
In a way. Like, yeah. It's quite interesting because everyone has a different relationship to grief. It's something that we will all experience.
Exactly. And, like, the more the film goes on, the more the realism kind of slips away, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Because...
gets more internal and more...
Yeah.
Frantic, I think.
Yeah. And there's just a lot of things that happen that kind of mirror almost his childhood experiences.
Mm.
But then... it's him as an adult, right? So we can really see that evolution from he's just visiting his parents to he's starting to relive childhood memories, like the Christmas, for example.
Yeah.
The getting into bed with his parents. But he's, like, in an adult body.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it is... like, the dynamic between him and his parents changes a lot. Which is... yeah. It's really tricky. It's, like, I think he's at home... and he's actively dreaming this up. Like, I think he's daydreaming. He's awake, daydreaming, thinking about these things.
Yeah.
But it feels so real because he's working through so many important things. And he's clearly not able to let it go.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, what would he do otherwise? Just stand in front of that house for hours, imagining what's going on inside.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to figure out. Is I was like, does he have a key to this house? Is he breaking and entering? Like, my film brain was going to all of the worst case scenarios. Right.
But then it wouldn't be like 80s on the inside, because the house very much feels old fashioned.
So it is just in his mind.
It is, but I think where I draw the line is that he actually went there the first time, saw the photo, saw the house, went to the field, and then.
I think you're right. I think that does make sense.
But we don't know, and there's no way to know, right?
Mm.
But that's kind of like where he's a very unreliable narrator, obviously.
Yeah.
Like,
that's interesting, that thought process when it comes to Harry, though.
Yeah.
Because is he even living in that building now?
This is why it gets so hard.
This is where it gets complicated.
What is real? We literally don't know anything.
This is where it gets complicated because... no one else exists in that building apart from him and Harry.
Yeah.
Does he even live there? But it's, like, modern and everything. So is it just a place that he's created in his mind to deal with these things? Or is it real? Or are we getting too deep? Like, what's going on?
No, I don't know. It could literally be anything.
But that's the fun part of it.
Yeah,
though.
There's so many layers and we don't know what layer we're actually on. There's so many floors, we don't know what floor we're actually
so
on.
So metaversy.
Like, listen. Also, Harry, so Adam's a writer, mm-hmm. and he's writing about his parents, so he visits his parents in his mind,
mm-hmm.
right? What if it's the exact same thing for Harry? Maybe you're right, maybe Harry doesn't exist, and it's all a figment of his imagination because that's what he's writing about.
Go. Let's talk about Harry then, because the way, spoiler alert, the way I understand Harry is that he also lost a partner young. And I thought, what a terrible way... like, what a terrible thing. He's lost his parents, he's grown up, accepted his queerness, fallen in love with someone, and then they die.
Mm.
That's how I understood it. And I think it adds another dimension to his grief, because he's not only dealing with childhood grief, he's dealing with the loss of a loved, like, a partner through a queer lens.
Mm-hmm.
And queerness comes with its own type of loneliness and its own type of grief. Because obviously grief comes in lots of different forms. And I think that was a really interesting layer to add. That he's not just lonely because he's got no family, but he's had to reconcile loneliness as a queer person.
Mm.
He's obviously dealt with his sexuality without his parents. He was raised by a granny. You know, he was surrounded by much older people growing up, and he's had to deal with these thoughts and feelings without the support of the two people he loved the most.
Yeah.
And that's hard in itself, but then the loneliness that comes with that. Because you know when you're like, obviously most of us kind of realise we were gay as teenagers, right? And yeah. I think kind of Adam alludes to the fact that he had the same thing. But you know when you're first kind of dealing with that, at least in our generation, I don't know about future generations, but you're kind of dealing with that feeling where you're like, does anyone else feel like I do? Or is it just me that feels like this?
Mm-hmm.
You've got no examples of people to look up to, especially further back. Like, they had nothing on TV or in the media or anything. And so you're like, it's quite isolating to kind of come to terms with that, because you have to just come to terms with that mostly on your own.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like the film does a really good job of kind of portraying that he has been through that and he's still trying to deal with being alone as a gay man. I just thought it was interesting.
Yeah. And also, when he talks to his dad about that bullying, he said that after they died, he had to make sure that he wasn't going to get bullied anymore. Yeah. Because he just lost his parents. And the last thing that he could bear with was, on top of that, being bullied. So I think what happened is that he pushed it all away so far.
Mm-hmm.
Just to avoid that anyway. So that adds another layer to that. Like
another layer of loneliness.
Yeah, that loneliness.
Mm.
And then, when he was in his 20s, is what I assume, he, and this is a conversation he has with Harry, is that he couldn't even... He was scared.
Yeah.
Like, it was scary being gay at that time because of AIDS going around, and that's all people could talk about.
If you've grown up surrounded by that.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, realizing that you're gay is terrifying.
Right.
Like, I can't imagine.
So, that is another layer. Like, his 20s, or first half of his 20s at least, he was scared of it.
Mm.
So, like, where does it end, right? And then he's, like, lonely in this massive building. So, yeah.
Yeah. It's mad. I think, also, whoever Harry is, if he was real or not, he also talks about the lonely feeling. Mm-hmm. He talks to Adam as their relationship kind of develops and they become more open and vulnerable with each other. He talks about how he's got parents and a brother and a sister, and they've, you know, they've married, have kids, whatever. And he says, I always felt like the outsider in my family. And we, you know, we assume that he says that because he is the gay one, and he, you know, it's tough, like, coming to terms with that, where there's no examples around you. And he literally talks about how he found it difficult.
Yeah.
And it, like, lonely.
Yeah.
So then, you know, these two people who are lonely find each other, seek solace in each other, then one of them dies. It's horrible. And then he's left to deal with all of that.
But so himself. When did he die? Like, this is, and we were briefly talking about this after we watched it, like, this, because it looks like he died before they even met properly. It looks like he died after he came to his apartment and he said no. That's what it looks like, because he's there with the same bottle.
Do you think? Oh, I didn't take it that way at all.
And he was drunk and he said, if only you had let me in. You're like, you should have let me in.
Oh my God, you're right.
Ever.
Oh my God.
This is what I think. Oh, it was stupid. All made up. And this is why, for me, it was so depressing at the end.
So you think...
Because I don't think the relationship actually happened. This is why...
Oh my God, you're right, it didn't.
This is why it's bleak as f***.
Okay, in which case, you're so right, it didn't happen.
Yeah.
Because in that case, then Harry is literally a figment of... like, he's another manifestation of Adam's loneliness.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, the queer side of his loneliness.
But he can't even let him in. And this is the thing, right? Like,
that's so true, because he can't let him in. It says that because Adam is struggling so much with grieving and queerness,
yeah,
that he can't let anyone in.
Exactly.
And that he needs to let go to move on. Like, he's let go of his parents.
Yeah. And he's almost, like, fantasizing or, like, having this whole imagination of what it would be like.
Yeah.
But he can't. And then...
And he's finally let go of his parents. But, you know, he's in his 40s. He's alone.
Yeah.
That's what he's dealing with. You're right. Oh, my God. So Harry wasn't real.
Harry wasn't real.
Okay, now I'm depressed.
Oh, maybe he is real, but maybe he's dead.
But he was real. They met.
They met once.
Because he drank himself to death, is that right?
Well, he was doing drugs as well, so I think it was probably...
Overdose.
A combination. Mm. Oh, we don't know. Because we don't know
anything. See, that's such a thing to how layered the film is, that one line. That's
holding
crazy.
The exact same bottle of gin.
Yeah.
And
yes.
Yes. And
I did spot that, but so, I just assumed it was. Oh God.
I made a suggestion to you after we watched the film about how to interpret it. So your reaction to me is probably coming from a completely different place, because I said maybe they were together before all of this, and then he died, and then the timeline just got jumbled in my head. Maybe they were together at some point in real life.
Well, that's what I thought.
But then maybe not, because he's literally dead. Like, it looks like that's a consequence of not going into Adam's apartment. Like, he went back to his flat, and he drank himself to death.
And then there was the impression that he'd been there for a while.
Yeah. Which makes sense, because a lot of time passes.
Yeah, so whilst Adam was trying to figure all of this stuff out, he wasn't letting Harry in.
Yeah.
Interesting.
It's honestly insane.
That makes me, now I'm really sad.
This is what I'm telling you. This is why it's so bleak. This is the issue.
But I think because it's so open to interpretation. Yeah.
But he said, "You didn't let me in." That's what Harry says. You didn't let me in.
Yeah, you're right.
You just needed to let me in. I needed to be let in. Like, he's telling him, like, I was so lonely. I just needed one person to let me in.
And the one person that couldn't let him in was also a lonely person.
Yeah.
It's like ships passing in the night. I feel like film does that quite well. Like, I feel like there's so many films where there's, like, people are passing ships and they don't actually... It speaks to the human experience that everyone's dealing with their own stuff, but to actually be present and let someone in is like the true test.
Yeah, because the even a small encounter they had literally changed both of their lives.
Yeah,
and they didn't even have, it's like you said, there were ships passing in the night. Like, they didn't even.
Yeah.
But it literally killed Harry, and it made Adam. Move on from his parents.
Yeah.
But then, like I was saying earlier, maybe Harry is just made up completely because he's writing. And he's writing about his parents.
Because that's the thing as well, is that because Adam is so unreliable, you don't know if he's, like, just... You don't know if Harry's a character he's writing. You don't know if Harry is a manifestation of his grief and loneliness and, like, queerness.
Mm-hmm. Maybe you just don't know. Maybe he's writing about moving on from his parents... with this relationship. Maybe he's just writing about it. What we're watching, what we think we're
watching.
Yeah,
but then he starts struggling with letting his parents go, and then the narrative unravels in his mind. Like, we don't know what we're watching.
Yeah, maybe everything that we're seeing is just his writing.
It's just his breakdown. Mate.
We can't figure this out.
Does anyone else know? Can you let us know your thoughts, please? Oh, speaking of, people did let me know their thoughts.
Oh.
Can I do a little detour?
Yeah.
People actually messaged me about this because I said we were going to record on it.
All of strangers?
Yeah.
So thrilled.
So we had one response who said, went by myself, cried my eyes out.
Same girl.
We had our lovely friend Lily who said, all of us crying.
I hear you, Lily.
Woman after my own heart. We also had absolutely destroyed me.
Yeah.
Was the review.
Feel ya. Thanks for listening.
Thanks, guys. But yeah, that pretty much sums it up, right?
Yeah.
All of us strangers, more like all of us crying.
All of us crying.
Thanks, Lily.
Like, it honestly destroyed me. God. Yeah. Because this is what I'm saying. Like, tell me one thing that's happy about this ending.
Let's talk about the ending, because
I can't get the shot out of my head. Like, I'm serious. It's a shot of them gorgeous. Lying on the bed.
It's beautiful. But then it's like they're all like stars in the sky. Does that mean that Adam's dead too?
This is what I'm saying.
Is it his life flashing before his eyes? I don't know. But then he's hugging Harry.
Very Shakespearean.
It is very Shakespearean. My God. But like at the end, he's hugging Harry, the imaginary Harry. They're comforting each other. Or he's comforting, because the whole time Harry's kind of comforting Adam, but in this final scene, Adam is comforting Harry.
Oh, because really? I thought Harry was spooning him. Did I get it wrong? I think he's spooned.
He's spooning Harry at the end.
Is he?
Yeah.
So this one shot that I can't get out of my head, I actually have it wrong.
I think. I remember it flipping round, so all of a sudden. It's just horrible. But then it kind of fades out and fades out, and all of a sudden we're a star in the sky.
Editing Amber here. Another interpretation of this final scene could be a fever dream of memories. In an interview with Digital Spy, director Andrew Hay explained that there is a way in which this film could have ended on an optimistic, joyful note. To me, that would have been too simplistic in terms of what the story is trying to unpick and understand, which is about the actual nature, the essence of love, and what is important within that. Just some interesting food for thought within the context of what we're talking about.
It makes it kind of feel futile at the end. I liked the ending. I thought it was a really fitting way to end it. But it makes it all feel futile. Like, all of these feelings and all of these emotions, and they all, you know, just stars in the sky now. They're just dead.
They're stars in the sky. Just like when you look at a skyscraper or a massive building.
At the beginning.
It's like little lights everywhere.
Like at the beginning.
Yeah. It's the same thing. Like, it's just the idea that in one building, so many different lives are going on with so many different layers.
Yeah.
It's the same. Like, it's just represented by stars at the end. What does it all mean? God f***ing knows.
What does it mean?
Before we finish this one, there's one thing I definitely want to talk about.
Yeah,
and go for that's it. About gay sex.
Talk to me.
Sharpen your ears. I loved the relationship, I will say, first of all. But I think this was like one of the most realistic gay, or like just relationships I've ever seen.
And it's not even real. No. Debatable.
He's a good writer. I'm busy writing about it. Just like, gorgeous. Honestly, insane.
Yeah,
how real it feels. And I'm not a gay man.
It's like I was there.
It's like I was it.
I'm not even. I'm not even a gay man. But okay, I want to ask you this. Obviously, we're going to be talking about Red, White, and Royal Blue after this. Yeah. Similar themes to do with sex scenes. I want to get your perception, because obviously we are not gay men, but like on screen, how does that work for you? Not in like...
What are you talking about? How does that work for me?
But like when...
I thought it was hot.
Kind of what I'm asking, like, what's your reaction to it? I don't mean in like a sexy way, but like in an aesthetic way.
No, I think it was super sexy.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
But I think like it's just like the gayness of it. But, like, I know that some queer women watch gay sex scenes and they're, like, indifferent. They're just like, whatever. Like, this does nothing. But I feel like some queer women watch it and they can kind of understand, because it's so gay.
It's about the intimacy.
That's it. Exactly. It's not,
yeah. Like, even, like...
But it's queer intimacy as well. Like, I can aesthetically appreciate that there is something sexy going on.
Yeah, no, for sure. Like, even... Sorry.
Sorry, I phrased that really badly.
No, but I totally get what you're saying. But I even have that with, like, some straight sex scenes. If they're really good...
Yeah.
Like, I don't care what bodies are in it.
Oh, 100%.
Because it's about, like, that... Sorry. I actually don't really like this word. It's about, like, that carnal, like...
I know what you mean, though.
Like, it's just, it's a bit visceral.
It's like human connection. Like, yeah. It's...
Like, it's seeing two, and especially in the... I love the sex scenes in this film. Like, I loved every single one.
Yeah.
And, like, I'm not a gay... I don't care about men. I don't... But...
Tagline of the episode. I don't care about men.
Like, you could tell... You could feel that kind of intimacy. Okay.
Yeah.
Let me see how I can phrase this appropriately. When you're in love with someone and you have sex, cut this appropriately. The way it like strengthens that bond,
intimacy, or,
like, that love,
yeah,
even more, but like exponentially strengthens it. That is exactly,
I get how it. Yeah.
They got it just right.
When you,
that's what I was seeing. Yeah. And this is why it worked. I don't care what the genders are of the people.
I completely agree.
If you when make you a sex see scene like that, yeah.
Yeah, when you see that visual representation of actual intimacy.
Yeah.
Especially like seeing that in a queer sex scene, that, because obviously like we grew up watching The L Word, right? Let's not mince words. Like that, there's very little intimacy there. Like it's all like, as you said, it's all like carnal, like physical.
Mm.
But when you actually see a well thought out queer sex scene through a queer lens, Andrew Scott is gay as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you see that commitment, they had an intimacy coordinator as well.
Mm-hmm.
That commitment to A, the film craft, and B, like actually portraying queer intimacy in such a nice way. Like, it's just so refreshing. They're actually connecting with each other.
Yeah.
Whether or not who's real and what, but, like, who cares?
Dude, honestly, and it's, like, clunky at the start, which is super realistic.
Yeah.
Like, and the way they talk through it. I love it.
It, like, a contrast that comes to mind is, like, Ammonite, right? Or, like, God's Own Country, even to a certain extent. Like, not, I feel bad. I'm not trashing Francis Lee. I swear, like, you make good movies, Francis Lee. But the way that sex is portrayed is so different.
Yeah.
Like, it's so not animalistic, yeah, but no. It's like, it's so base.
Yeah.
It's intimate.
Yeah.
And it's loving.
Like, they're not just...
And it's so refreshing because it's like, thank God.
Especially...
People are watching queer characters interact in this loving, kind way with each other.
Especially because they're gay men. And that's so rare to have intimate sex scenes that are not all about getting off really quick.
Yeah.
In a film about gay men.
Yeah, so true.
Like, how many examples can you give? Aside from... Sorry, I can't think. Red, White, and Royal Blue.
I thought that was good.
Yeah.
This is our episode. But
this
also,
is what I wanted to compare. This is where I saw the similarities, is in the way they handle the sex scenes.
Brokeback Mountain, maybe.
No.
But that's not as...
No.
No.
No. And I love that film, but that's what I mean. That's like rough. It's like aggression. It's like that carnal.
But I mean, in terms of the intimacy that the character.
Carnal. I'm gonna stop saying that.
Stop saying carnal.
Sorry.
The way I mean, in terms of the intimacy that's shown between the characters, not just the sex.
It's aggressive in Brokeback Mountain. Even their intimacy.
The sex is, yeah.
Even their intimacy. Yeah. In a way.
Okay.
And like,
but I can't.
Slander. It's not a slander.
No.
It's not slander.
It's not a slander.
It's not a slander.
I can't think of another example.
I just think the representation side of it is so good.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I agree.
If I was a gay boy in making.
Gay boy in the making. I need to ask my gay friends. Gay friends, hey.
Hi. If I was a gay boy in the making and I watched that, I was like, like, it just felt so... Yeah. I loved it. I ate it up. I ate it up just like Harry ate.
Bleep, 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 bleep.
Actually, I thought that was quite hot. And I'm a woman.
I was really surprised by my reaction to that scene.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Good stuff.
Any final thoughts, girly?
Is there any happiness left in the world? All the lights have gone out in my soul. I
know you've got a tough relationship with these things, so I appreciate you.
I have a top three bleak films.
Okay.
Yeah. Number one, Dancer in the Dark.
Oh, I haven't seen that one.
Don't.
Okay.
Number two, Aniara.
Oh.
The Swedish film I wrote about in my dissertation.
Yeah. Oh, ouch.
Number three, All of Us Strangers. And they all have one thing in common, and it's just bleakness at the end.
Yeah.
Not to say that I didn't like it, because I think it's a really good film.
And oh, it's not trashing the film at all.
At all.
We've talked for an hour about how much we love this film.
Exactly. I might have to, like, not watch it again. Or maybe in, like, 10 years.
But that is how I feel about It's a Sin.
That's show. That's fair.
Beautiful, well-acted, well-crafted, incredible representation from someone who lived through it, can never watch it again. It's too sad. It's too heartbreaking.
Yeah.
And that's how I feel about All of Us Strangers.
That's pretty heartbreaking.
Yeah. Anyway. Shall I wrap up?
Yeah, do you have any final thoughts?
No. Final thoughts. Gorgeous.
One of the lines that Harry says to Adam that I really liked is when Adam said that, or like he said, my parents both died, but it's a really long time ago. And Harry's like,
I don't think that matters.
Yeah, I don't think that matters. I was like, oh.
Yeah.
God, he's sensitive soul.
It's nice because it doesn't. Whether or not Harry is real, whether or not that actually happened, it's a comforting, reassuring thing to know that it doesn't matter how long it's been since you've lost someone.
Yeah.
Like, it's still valid. It's still grief.
Yeah.
In whatever form it is.
Exactly. So, yeah, that was nice. And I think their conversation they had about being queer was amazing.
Yeah.
So, like, talking even about the meaning of, like, the word queer and stuff like that. That was really powerful. I like that.
So good. Yeah, again, now that has another layer to it, because it's like, is he teaching himself that, like...
I mean, he must have done a lot of reflecting.
Yeah.
Like you said, dealing with it by himself.
Yeah.
For so long. And Paul Mescal's character, Harry kind of seems like the perfect partner.
Yeah.
Like he does nothing wrong. So it makes sense in a way that he's a figment.
Do you want to, now, shall I show you the picture of me when I met Paul Mescal at the BAFTAs last year?
Yeah, show me.
I'll have to find it.
He's a fine looking man, but Andrew Scott.
He's a lovely man as well. Very, very nice. I would want to meet Andrew Scott also.
He's hot.
Hot priest.
Woof. My favorite kind.
Thank you so much, everyone, for listening to this episode of the UK Film Review podcast. If you like this episode, we have a episode that comes out on the third Thursday of every month. Gay Actually, for your listening ears. As I said, we also have our Gay Actually channel. We are doing another podcast this week on Red, White and Royal Blue. So if you kind of need like a light relief after this episode, be sure to check that out. It's already out. Bit of light relief, fun comedy, fun gay vibes in a slightly similar way, but also a quite different way.
Very horny.
God, that guy that plays Alex. Wow.
Yeah.
So be sure to check us out over there. You can also, on the UK Film Review podcast, find other series such as The Phantom Zone and The Scream Test. All very good, well worth a listen. You can find us on Instagram at gayactuallypodcast and via email at gayactuallyuk@gmail.com.
Fabulous.
Thank you so much, Joyce. Always a pleasure.
Thank you, Amber. Always a pleasure. Likewise.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Take care and goodbye. Bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.